Bonjour.
Welcome to So French, the show about the twists and turns, intrigues and insights to all things French.
Every 2 weeks, we select the best, most interesting and fascinating of French news stories, all brought to you from our studio in the heart of Paris. My name is Stéphane de Vries.
And my name is Sarah Bertelsson.
This week, we'll try to wrap up what's been going on in the country in the last couple of weeks, as the Yellow Vest protests have disrupted more or less everything in the everyday life of France's citizens. So what's going to happen now?
And in the middle of this, the environment being the collateral damage, hundreds of thousands of French demanding more to be made to save our planet.
But first, where have we been, Sarah? A lot of listeners probably have missed us over the
last
2 weeks.
Where have you been, Stefan? I would like to ask.
I've been all over the place. Of course, the Yellow Vest took us.
It's all connected, of course, to what's been going on our absence.
Yeah, we worked very hard, I think, the last couple of weeks. The Yellow Vests. I went to Poland.
Took the best of us.
I went to Poland to cover the climate summit, but it wasn't a big success. But nevertheless, it cost me a week of my life, and the planet was not saved. So yeah, we were very busy. So we do apologize for the
fact that we
left you all alone, all our listeners around the world. But we're back here.
But to be fair, there has been quite a lot of international coverage as well of the Yellow Vest protests.
Absolutely. Of course, the images were quite spectacular, if I may say. A lot of violence. And of course, the Yellow Vest itself, I think it's quite a genius coup. Because
it definitely is.
Everybody has this Yellow Vest. If you drive a car, you have to have one in your car. And it looks just, you know, it attracts the attention.
Of course it does.
Very
it's
smart.
Made to make you glow
so
in the dark.
From a marketing point of view, it's brilliant.
It's very, very clever.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, the branding was perfect.
Yeah. But it of course, it turned from an online petition very quickly into a mass movement, or well, at least a very followed movement.
It's a very disruptive movement,
very
I must
disruptive,
say. Because,
yeah.
I mean, yes, it's true that maybe it's difficult to say. There has been and was quite a lot of support for the movement, even from the beginning when it was launched. I mean, over summer, and then this was this petition that was launched in October, and the support was quite strong. But if we're looking at the actual numbers of people, it's not that massive.
No.
I think when it was at its biggest, we were talking about 300,000
yes,
people
at the most
in France.
Yeah.
Which is nothing.
No. And compared to, for instance, a couple of years ago when there were big demonstrations against gay marriage,
yes,
there were more than 1 million people in the streets.
Yes.
So, and then the government, you know, didn't change anything of the law, and now a relatively small movement. In Paris last weekend, there were 3,000 protesters and 8,000 yes, police officers. So there was
rarely seen.
Two and a half police officers for every demonstrator. It's interesting that such a relatively small movement can completely disrupt the country and get the government on its knees. But of course, it all started out as a protest against rising fuel prices. Now, ironically, the fuel prices have gone down the last couple
yes,
of weeks a lot. But that was not, of course,
because of the international oil prices.
That's how it works. Yeah. So, but at the same time, the government, you know, they were pretty nervous, right? Or maybe they still are.
They were, there's a good expression in French, le ras-le-bol expression, which means like it's the it had enough.
Yeah.
It was the straw that broke the camel's back. It's a good expression that in French tend to have a ras-le-bol quite often.
Yeah.
But in this case, I think they really managed this movement put the finger on something that, of course, is nothing new and that has been here, you know, it's a part of society here, which is the division and the social injustice.
Yeah.
That is, I mean, very, very a true problem in France.
Yeah, the list of demands is huge, and we cannot speak about the Yellow Vest, but there are many Yellow Vests. They have different wishes. Some wishes are ludicrous, going from the bringing back the death penalty, but also free biological food and schools and canteens. So it's very diverse. But of course, the main thing is the social injustice and the fact that a lot of people in this country are struggling, and that is a serious issue. So how did the government respond?
Well, first there was nothing.
Yeah,
and then they after the most violent. It's interesting to see as well. I must say that you know when these protests started outside of Paris, roundabouts in towns and regions outside. It wasn't until it actually reached Paris and when we saw that violence in the streets of Paris that it actually forced the government to do something,
yeah.
Which is a quite sad reality,
yeah.
That it's not, it is so, and in one way it sort of shows exactly what these protesters were trying to point at, that we're the invisible France.
Yeah, because government didn't see it coming at all. Huh?
No political party. They didn't sort of care until it was right at their doorstep.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah. And that's when the government was forced. Well, it was first a speech by Emmanuel Macron, who was quiet, for quite some time.
Yeah, over a week.
And then he gave this famous speech where he laid out a number of proposals to sort of try to quell the protests.
Yeah, he promised to increase the minimum wage, which is now about 1,500 euros a month, gross, of course, with 100 euros for about 5 million people. He also promised to remove a planned tax increase for a lot of pensioners in this country. And then an old idea from Nicolas Sarkozy.
Some recycling going on
recycling, here. Fortunately, some attention for the environment, recycling. The overtime for all workers will be tax-free from now. So there was already the case when Nicolas Sarkozy was president. Then Hollande changed it.
It was one of the first things that he actually did, I think, when he took office, that he started taxing the overtime again.
Yeah, indeed. And now Emmanuel Macron, successor to François Hollande, reintroduced it so all the French that are working overtime can now earn more money. Interestingly, also the government, acknowledged that there was not enough debate. So they now launched a national 3-month consultation with civil society groups, mayors, businesses, and also the Yellow Vests to discuss other reforms around a couple of themes. So national debates. The French don't have a tradition of, you know, debating all together and then coming with a consensus. So this is what the government...
A lot of debates, though.
Yeah, a lot of debates. That's true. Yeah.
It's a big tradition here.
That's true. But they don't have... They never end in some kind of, you know, like in Scandinavia or the Benelux with a consensus.
Yeah, it's
based. Always a conflict. So,
but I think what we need to acknowledge in this is as well that there is a big, big fear in the political class that this will turn into some kind of political movement on its own. Of course, there are many now who are willing to and want to try to recuperate this movement and the people who've chosen to get involved into their political party. So we have, of course, the government.
Yeah.
They want to create this national dialogue to make sure that these people don't go away and do their thing on their own, because that would, of course, be a threat to the newly created movement by Emmanuel Macron himself.
Yeah. But what's interesting is that, indeed, like you say, there are some political parties who try to piggyback on this movement, but like Marine Le Pen and Jean-Luc Mélenchon on the left, but that didn't really work. Huh? They were not welcome. And this movement has no leader.
No.
There are a couple of leaders, and some of them now want to have a list during the European elections. But it's not a political movement. And it looks like they really don't want to become a political movement, because they don't want to become like the ones they are trying to fight.
What some are pointing at, though, and what could be quite interesting to see, is the resemblance between the Yellow Vests and the Five Star Movement in Italy, which was brought out in this sort of the same kind of way, with a very diverse base, people both from the far left, far right, and very diverse demands. And they actually managed to create this political movement that is now governing, actually, the country in a coalition. And many are saying that there is a lot of resemblances between these these two movements. So it will be, well, something to look out for in the coming months.
Well, one of the people who started the petition, a lady from, I think, the north of France, she said that this movement started in Italy. So she's clearly inspired by what happened in Italy. It's quite interesting. So the government came up with some, well, you know, they reached out to the Yellow Vests. But of course, it's going to cost something. Where's the money going to
come? There's no such thing as a free lunch.
No, especially not in
Paris. Of course, no. Well, someone will have to pay for it. First of all, these measures come with the cost. I think it has been estimated, even though it's not fully calculated, that around 10 billion euros will be the bill for all of this. And that has repercussions, of course, on the national budget of France.
Absolutely. France will breach the public deficit cap of 3% of the GDP. And that's, of course, the EU rules, the European rules. And of course, Macron, when he was elected, he promised that he would, for the first time, respect all those rules.
Yeah, because we must say that, I mean, well, what this is nothing new. So no. why be so upset? Because France has never kept it.
Well, actually, maybe this year. This year, that's indeed the first time in 11 years, 2018. But it's still not sure. It's about 2.8-2.9%. But that was only once. So next year they will breach all the promises again. So that's bad news.
And how are they going to finance these 10 billion euros then?
I don't know. In France, money comes always from, you know, invisible cash machines. Probably us, the taxpayers.
There is one tax on one corporate tax that a cut that they had planned for next year that's now going to push back. So the government saves some money on that. But of course, somewhere this money has to come from somewhere. On the other hand, of course, what the argument is that if you're increasing people's spending power, that in itself will make the economy grow and lead to, you know, benefits on the other side.
That's what they hope, of course. And of course, the economic growth of France is pretty low, lower than predicted at the beginning of this year. And then there's also the cost for businesses, very high as well. Of course, December is Christmas shopping month, but a lot of shops were closed in Paris Saturday after Saturday after Saturday. And most of the businesses, they get 20 to 25% of their yearly turnover in December. So, you know, if you close the shops, it's very bad.
People, I must say, I have never seen Paris as it was 2 weeks ago.
So quiet
it
in the streets. Yeah,
absolutely empty. In the city center, the shops were all barricaded with wooden walls and panels in front of them, and no one was out. It was completely quiet. And it was this really weird, airy feeling.
Yeah.
And of course, a little bit of tension as well, with people being scared that actually something could, it would be more violence. But of course, this comes at an extremely high cost for the shop owners and for
all
businesses.
The big department stores in the city, like Galeries Lafayette, which is the biggest department store in the world, they were closed as well, very popular with foreign tourists. And those stores, they have a turnover like 25 million euros a day, you know, and they have to pay their people and yeah, so a lot of
people. But they're saying that, you know, the online shopping has actually grown.
Yeah, of course.
During this month, and that, what is a bit maybe funny in the whole story is that Amazon could be the biggest winner in this whole protest. I don't know what the Yellow Vest movement is.
No, indeed. And then, of course, there's the image of France, the world's most visited country. After the terrorist attacks in 2015 and 16, hotels and restaurants suffered a lot. But they survived, and 2018 promised to be a record year. But unfortunately, no longer. A lot of cancellations were made. Of course, the Champs-Élysées is world famous. If tourists see that street burning, then, you know, they will probably cancel their visit to Paris, which a lot of people did. So
a lot of people did, exactly.
Yeah, and it's bad for tourism. On the general, it costs much more than the 10 billion euros that the government promised to the Yellow Vests.
Well, so what now, Stefan? What will this be? Will there be a Merry Christmas in Paris and in France? Has, you know, the calm returned after the government's measures, and you know,
it's hard to say. I think this will go on for a while because a lot of yellow vests now think, okay, the government gives us what we want, so maybe we can get more. Of course, there's now the holiday starts, so maybe we'll calm down a little bit. But this weekend again, there will be new actions by the yellow vests. They now promise to block the borders with Switzerland, Italy, Belgium, Germany.
Luckily, Santa Claus is, you know, he's flying over.
Yeah, he's flying all over, so he doesn't care. He's lucky because if he would have driven a lorry, then he would be stopped at the border because they want to stop all the lorries. So they will continue their action, but they'll probably be back in January because the anger in the society is really, really profound. So I don't see why they would stop protesting.
And it's shown that, you know, their protest actually worked.
There are results, and still, according to some polls, about 70-75% of the French support or at least sympathize with their actions. So they'll probably be back, and they are not the only ones who are going to be back, because another guy.
Oh yes, exactly. I mean, you know, everything has its repercussion. Well, how do you say it? And who will be back? Someone who we haven't heard from in some time, but who thought he felt urged and called to return to politics.
And that was Mr. Nicolas Bruni, also known as Nicolas Sarkozy. He felt that the country needed him. And so he met Macron a lot of times over the last couple of weeks. And now suddenly Sarkozy is back in politics somehow.
Yes.
It's the old world. And that's, of course, exactly what Macron wanted to defeat when he stood for election.
Do you think that Nicolas Sarkozy will get a real influence on French politics again? Or actually, has he ever really withdrawn?
I don't think he has ever really withdrawn. But of course, what is new is that Macron now consults him and that he's there, you know. And the idea of making overtime work again tax-free, that's purely Sarkozy. So it's very strange that Macron is now so close again with Sarkozy, because he stands for everything Macron didn't like in politics. And of course, Sarkozy is involved in many crime cases. He has to stand trial in at least three separate affairs. And Sarkozy as a president had not done well. The unemployment increased with 1 million people, public debt almost doubled, so he has a very bad track record.
So why do you think then that this newly found friendship?
I don't know. I think that Macron just needs advice, and then he thinks I will call an old president because he has the experience, and he wouldn't call.
And he burned some bridges with Hollande.
Exactly. Yeah. He defeated him. So it's a strange turn of events.
Likely to continue next year, I must say.
Yes, you know, absolutely. And I'm afraid we will talk again about the yellow vests in January here on So French.
Vous écoutez So French.
You are listening to So French.
Now, as France was in the middle of trying to deal with this yellow vest movement and crisis, we saw the return of something else, and something that the country has gotten a little bit too familiar with over the last couple of years. After a man decided to spread terror in the French city of Strasbourg by shooting randomly near the town's famous Christmas market.
Yes, and the attacker was quickly identified as a local from Strasbourg, Sherif Chekat, a 29-year-old man from Strasbourg. He was tracked down after 48 hours of manhunt and in a shootout with the police as they were trying to arrest him. Chekat was killed. So, this is the story of the attacker in Strasbourg. What do we know about his motivation and about the man?
Quite little, actually, about his motivations. We do know quite a lot about him, though, because turned out that Sherif Chekat was very known to French authorities. He had been convicted 27 times.
And he was only 29 years old. So, yeah.
the calculations on can you make on your own. But I mean, there's a lot of convictions, mostly for petty crimes. I mean, robbery and smaller things. But what was also known to the authorities that during one of his several prison terms, he seems to have been radicalized. So this was something that happened while he was in prison.
Which happens quite often.
Which is often the case, exactly. Yeah. And so he was on the watch list of the French authorities for possible radicalization and extremist views. However, there was nothing apparently, as what they're saying at the moment, that really showed or any indication that he was on his way of actually putting an attack or something like that. It seems to have been a quite improvised attack, we must say. He was using a very old gun at this attack, and he just, you know, ran out and started shooting without any real, neither plan or you know, idea, it looks like. It could have been that early in the morning, the police had raided his home in a completely different case, but that might have prompted him to actually, you know,
He felt probably that he was that the police was closing in, and it may have been a reaction to that. The Islamic State, or what's left of it, claimed on its official news agency site AMAC that the attacker was a soldier of the Islamic State, but it used language that suggested that the attack was probably inspired by the group's ideology and not really directed by the group, and it could also be an opportunistic a claim, you know, because the Islamic State has not been very successful last year.
Yeah, so the French authorities have been, I mean, they didn't take that claim of responsibility very seriously. And as far as what we hear from the experts at this point, I mean, most of them are saying that the Islamic State group at this point is not capable of organizing that type of attack that we saw in Paris in 2015, for example, or in Brussels, where, you know, you have an organization, a plan, and, you know, proper real cells, terror cells that are set up. But of course, it's possible that that he was inspired, as you say, and that he was he wanted to be or to make something in the name of the Islamic State group.
Yeah, yeah. But he was a very heavy criminal.
But what is interesting in this story, and I think that we don't talk enough about it, is that how many times haven't we heard the thing radicalized in prison?
Yeah.
Because what always happens in these cases, of course, is when it's found out that the attacker is on the authorities' watch list, which is also almost every time the case. People are starting to shout, well, how is it possible? Why wasn't he stopped earlier? Why didn't people, why didn't the police keep a closer eye on this person? But I think that, you know, what we should actually put our attention to is the fact that they've almost always been, they have been in, you know, in prison. They have been, you know, part of the French legal system.
Absolutely.
For many, many years. And they are not radicalized. Well, very few of them radicalized in the mosque or on their own or at home. They're radicalized in prison.
Yeah, yeah.
Under the watchful eye of the French authorities,
absolutely.
I must say. Which is, so lock them up. I mean, would that solve anything?
No, there were also people saying this was the fault of Europe, so we have to close all the borders. But this guy was, he was killed 1,000 meters from the place where he was born. And he attacked also in his own city.
Which is also almost the case with all the terrorists we have had in France. I mean, of course, a couple of exceptions, but they're French, they're born here, they're raised here, citizens of this nation.
And then along the road, something goes wrong, and with the horrible effects we've seen in Strasbourg, of course. But it was an uncomfortable reminder that a threat, a terror threat, but at least threats, still remains high here in France. And now something completely different, but much more important maybe, as the government has backtracked on the now infamous carbon tax, a sign of these polarized times, the French state is now being sued by four NGOs for not having fulfilled its environmental obligations. And it's quite a success. It started this week.
Yes, and it sounds something like this.
Bonsoir. On a beaucoup réfléchi hein, ces ouais. derniers temps, ouais. Et on va attaquer tout simplement l'État français en justice.
Pour inaction face au dérèglement climatique.
On est maintenant des millions à voir que le climat se réchauffe, se dérègle.
Those were the voices of world famous actors Juliette Binoche and Marion Cotillard, together with dozens of other French celebrities. They're supporting this action through an online petition. And they're accusing the government here in France of being in the hands of lobbyists, and that despite of the French population being ready and eager to make efforts and sacrifices to save Mother Earth, its leaders are not doing enough.
Yeah, and what's interesting is the enthusiasm people have shown for this petition. More than 1 million signatures after only 48 hours online, and when we record this.
That's some action.
That is some action, indeed. To compare the Yellow Vest petition against the carbon tax, collected that many signatures as well, also 1 million, but it took them 2 months
wow.
To get the same number of signatures. So a big success for this one. We don't know where it will lead to, but it sounds ludicrous maybe to sue the French state, but it has been done before.
And in what country?
In the Netherlands. Yeah, in 2015. A court in The Hague ordered the Dutch government to cut its emissions by at least 25% within 5 years in a landmark ruling. The Dutch government then appealed, but the judgment was confirmed earlier this year. So that means that the Dutch government now really, really has to do much more. They have to fulfill its duty to protect citizens from climate change. And it was actually brought as a civil case by a former Shell employee and turned into an activist. But it does put the Dutch government under a lot of pressure, because now they really have to do a lot of things. And I think that this inspired the French to...
Absolutely. For this case. Is what they're yeah. hoping too, that they will push the government to do more. And so this sort of takes us back to yeah. where this podcast started with carbon emissions.
La boucle est bouclée, as we say in French.
As the French say. Yeah. And we will see. I mean, maybe something positive will come out of the end of this tunnel.
Yeah.
The light at the end of the tunnel.
There will be green light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah. But it's interesting. So 1 million signatures in a couple of days only to attack the French state. That wraps up this edition of So French. We hope you have enjoyed it. Please follow us on Twitter at So French News, and you can listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and even on YouTube.
And we will be back next week with our last episode of the year. It will be a special one, a long conversation with the French writer and journalist Agnès Poirier. With her, we are looking back on the year 2018, and we'll talk about the intellectual life in Paris in the 1950s.
Don't forget to rate us on iTunes, and please leave a review. That way more people will find us. And if you happen to be in Paris, you can also listen to us on air on World Radio Paris.
And if you like French music, check out our free playlist on Spotify, which we update regularly. We'll try to put in some nice Christmassy songs as well for you this week. Just search for So French Music or click the link on our website.
And we'll be back in January with a new episode of So French.
We hope you will join us for the next year. Thank you for listening.
And happy holidays.
Au revoir.